Welcome to another edition of the best of Dark Matters Radio. And I am your host, of course. My name is Don Ecker, and today's show is a classic. Back in July of 1994, on my old radio program, UFOs Tonight, I hosted Mr. Ron Reguerre and Lee Graham, both aerospace employees of Aerojet. Now, it was through Ron and through Lee Graham that UFO Magazine broke the story of the DSP spy satellite. Now, if you're not familiar with America's spy satellite services, the DSP satellite system is one that scans the entire globe for the launching of missiles. I mean, this satellite array is so powerful that it can literally detect a barbecue burning in your backyard. Now, of course, the DSP spy satellite is configured to delete those kind of things, but it is actually that powerful. As a matter of fact, it was through Ron Reguerre and Lee Graham and another guy by the name of Joe Stafula that I broke the story of the fast walker, slow walker NORAD designation for UFOs. As we discovered, the DSP spy satellite could literally detect UFOs entering and leaving Earth's atmosphere routinely. Now, Ron Reguerre and Lee Graham were two of those very odd guys that would not take no for an answer. They were continually bombarding the U.S. government and the U.S. Air Force with Freedom of Information Act requests in order to determine what exactly the American military and intelligence agencies were hiding from the American public. Now, there's a lot more about this, but it's best that we go back to that July evening in 1994 on UFOs Tonight. This is definitely a show worth hearing. So hang on. The show's coming at you right now. Good evening. My name is Don Ecker, the show UFOs Tonight. You're listening to the Cable Radio Network. Well, once again, joining me in studio is Mr. Dwight Schultz, star of screen and stage, and recently, in the last few months, somebody that has come out publicly discussing his interest in the phenomenon. Also in studio tonight is a former guest that is making a return appearance, Mr. Lee Graham. Mr. Graham, of course, has been on this program a number of times. He is an electronic technician working for the Aerojet Space Corporation. Those are the good folks that have done a lot for our aerospace and defense industries. And for the first time joining us in studio tonight is another employee of the Aerojet Corporation and a gentleman that is no stranger to the strange field of UFOs, and that's a gentleman by the name of Ron Reguerre. Ron is a senior specification analyst with Aerojet, somebody that has been involved in great depth with this phenomena for many years. And if you have read the most recent issue of Omni Magazine, Mr. Reguerre is quoted in there several times on the DSP satellite, and that's one of the topics we're going to be covering tonight. Now, tonight also, before we get into the show, is, of course, the day before the end of the month of July, 1994. Today is July 30th, and tomorrow,
July 31st, of course, is the long-awaited premiere of the made-for-television movie Roswell. And Dwight, you had mentioned earlier today that you've been reading some reviews of this film.
Yes, indeed. Both the Los Angeles Times and the New York Times have given this motion picture kudos, friends. Kudos, except Walter Goodman in the New York Times says, of course it's silly because Washington couldn't keep a secret for 30 years. He hasn't been reading his own newspaper. But yes, it actually did get very good reviews, and I'm proud of that because I think it is a fine film.
Why do you think that so many people are under the misapprehension that Washington cannot keep secrets?
Well, that was an argument used by Menzel, by Phil Klass, for many, many years. It was an easy way to be dismissive of the subject. You didn't have to get into the details. You didn't have to get involved in a polemic if you didn't want to. You could just say, everybody knows in Washington, D.C., you can't possibly keep a secret for 30 years. But of course, that was until very recent times when we found out that a few 40-year-old secrets were kept. Experimentation on our veterans with mustard gas, and of course, the Department of Energy, the recent papers that have been released by the Department of Energy detailing the radiation experiments on our citizenry. So now it's very difficult to say that. As I say, Walter Goodman clearly doesn't read the New York Times because that was the paper that broke this story, the most recent story. But it's no longer fashionable to say it. So he's out of date.
Well, I think we're going to find out tonight that, in fact, there is a great deal of secrecy, especially when it is concerned with our national defense. I think we'll probably discuss what the National Security Act is all about and how, in fact, Uncle Sam does treat its secrets when people try to find out what's really been going on. And tomorrow, here on the Pacific Coast, Pacific Daylight Time, Roswell will premiere at 8 o'clock, 8 p.m. The film is going to run approximately an hour and 35 minutes. And for all you folks that are going to be tuning in or having friends perhaps tape this film, tell them to keep the tape running for at least another 10 minutes because immediately following Roswell, Showtime is going to have a special on how Roswell, the movie, was made. And Dwight, you were aware that JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, contractor with NASA, screened Roswell this past week?
That's what I heard, and I understand a little bird told me that they liked it.
Yes.
Had a 35-millimeter print, too. It wasn't a video. They actually ran the film and liked it. And I would like to have been there, of course, to have talked to some of the scientists.
I would have, too. I don't, unfortunately, neither of us received an invitation. I've already seen the film, though, three times, so it's...
But it's one of those curious things, because I've been fortunate enough to talk to a lot of physicists, a lot of scientists, and in person, I've never had one ridicule the subject of unidentified flying objects, ever. But in print, that's all that I have ever seen.
Well, you know, I told you the last 2 days I've been doing some extensive research and refreshing my own memory with a number of reference works that I have. And it's really funny because, you know, if you don't keep up with something, you start to lose it if you don't use it. And I've been reading Dave Jacobs' original PhD thesis, The UFO Controversy in America. And I've been going back, and he detailed the 40s and 50s, what was really going on in depth with the Air Force, the government, the intelligence agencies, and people like Donald Kehoe and Donald Menzel. And I'd like to do a program in the very near future on a lot of that information and show people exactly what the Air Force's position was in those days. And believe me, it was not hands-on.
No.
Publicly, it was not hands-on.
And they depend on, I think our whole society, in fact, depends on a limited memory. As we put more and more of our information into hard drives, I think we're taking more and more information out of our heads. If you go back to Newsweek magazines or Time magazines in the 70s, you'll see things that will amaze you. You might even get the feeling that our scientific community depends on you forgetting about the studies in the 70s so that they can present a completely different idea to you today. But the secret to this story, the UFO story, lies between 1947 and 1956, as to what our government really thinks about it.
Oh, I agree. I couldn't agree more. And we are just about roughly 10 minutes, not quite, but almost 10 minutes after the hour. I want to give out the telephone number so everybody knows how they can get in here and join our conversation tonight. Also, let me tell you, for you folks out there, if you don't get a chance to see Roswell tomorrow, it's going to air again Thursday, August 4th at 9:30 p.m. Pacific time, and it will air again Tuesday, August 9th, 8 p.m. Pacific. So look for it July 31st, tomorrow at 8 p.m., once again August 4th at 9:30, and then Tuesday, August the 9th at 8. And my name is Don Ecker. This is UFOs Tonight. My in-studio guest tonight, of course, once again joining us is Mr. Dwight Schultz and Mr. Lee Graham and Mr. Ron Reguerre. We're going to be talking about funny stuff happening in outer space. And look, if you have been wondering exactly how to call us up to join the conversation, this is what you do. All right. We are coming back, and we got a little music interlude there, Dwight.
I know. I feel very, very good to hear that music coming in like that. Surprises me.
Okay.
Renee back from San Diego.
Sometimes your accents surprise me. All right, I'd like to welcome Lee and Ron. I'd like to welcome both you gentlemen in here. Lee, you've been here a number of times, and we have discussed primarily a lot of what you have been involved in as far as your Freedom of Information Act requests, trying to track down some rather questionable activities by the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense. You've been, and I've called you this in a series of stories I've done in UFO Magazine, a real bulldog on the trail of truth, justice, and the American way, I guess.
Well, thank you for the compliment.
Ron, you've been involved in this for a long time, too. You've never been on this show before, and I want to welcome you, especially joining us in studio tonight. You've just recently been quoted rather extensively in the new issue of Omni Magazine on one of the chief topics we're going to be talking about tonight.
Yes, I was contacted by Patrick Gweege, and he interviewed me several times, and we exchanged some information. I was surprised he knew almost about as much of it as I did, but we were able to finally put the story together, and it came out this month. We were surprised.
Well, you know, I've been haunting the computer bulletin boards for many years now, and I originally heard about this story in a series of messages, I believe, if I remember correctly, that were going on Prodigy between you, Joseph Stafiula, and some other people, of course, were talking about it. Now, knowing Stafiula, and he is back on the East Coast, I spoke to him, and he sent me a document out, which I later sent on to Lee. Now, I realize that nobody in the listening audience out there can see this document, but, and as a matter of fact, right now, I can't even see this document. I don't know where I stuck it. Lee, this document seemed to show an incident that happened with the DSP satellite, Deep Space Platform satellite. Oh, Ron, you have another copy of it there. And an object or an unidentified thing that this DSP satellite picked up, and the duration of this allegedly lasted 9 minutes, which yes, would seem to cancel out such things as meteorites or even a man-made craft, which would seem to be very easily identified. I mean, after all, that's what the DSP satellite is up there for, isn't it?
I hope it's up there for that purpose.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't you and Ron, very briefly, and I'm sure there are many people out there tonight that have not heard either of you before and may not be familiar with this particular satellite system and what it does. Why don't you two guys give us a brief rundown, what you are able to talk about. I realize that there are many aspects to this system that are classified and you cannot talk about, but tell us what you can.
Okay, this is Ron, by the way. For over 20 years, the DSP has been the cornerstone of our early warning system. It was originally designed to detect the launch of intercontinental ballistic missiles and also to do test band monitoring of nuclear events. Now, we've had this program going on, and it's evolved from a detector system that weighed about 2,000 pounds, had about 2,000 detectors, to one that now includes about 6,000 detectors and weighs about 4,000 pounds, the upper limit of the launch vehicle.
So in other words, it couldn't be much larger than that and still get into space with the present...
With the present technology we're aware of, anyway. We don't have the capability of launching it. But anything much bigger than that, which is one of the reasons the Air Force is looking to a smaller and hopefully for the taxpayers less expensive system that will encompass some of the newer capabilities that we've been investigating at our company.
Okay, Lee, you've been involved in this project for many years also.
Yes.
What exactly can you tell us about what is physically existent on the satellite?
Well, I'm on the nuts and bolts end, and the device that we built in a building called the High Bay is the actual detection system itself. We test it in a big vacuum chamber. And
now, what does it detect? Optical light, infrared, X-ray?
The device that we built detects infrared energy. That any object that gives off enough infrared energy will be detected by the satellite.
So, in other words, like during Desert Storm, where we were able to detect every Scud launch the Iraqis sent up, these were, in effect, being detected by your system on the DSP.
That's yes, correct. Ron has an article right there that proves that.
Yeah.
But this also, which means it will detect anything that gives off heat.
Well, if it's above a certain, what we call threshold level, let me briefly go through how the sensor detects things. We have 6,000 detectors. Each detector responds to energy that goes over the detector array as it scans. Each detector output is sampled about 7,000 times per second. And that gives us about 34 million samples per second of detected events.
So in other words, 34 million times per second it will search for heat.
It searches for heat. From those, we convert those to a 5-digit binary number representing the brightness of that event. That gives us 170 million bits per second that we're dealing with. Those values below a certain threshold are tossed out. We know they're not of significance. Those that form a peak, in other words, three detections that form a peak, pass on down through another processor where they are further refined and put in the data stream, sent downstream, encrypted, and sent down to the ground station.
So NORAD then would want to take a look and make a determination on what these particular things were. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So from the way I understand it, and from Lee's and my conversations before, NORAD, which of course is responsible for the early warning defense of the United States of America, continental U.S. and all U.S. possessions.
And Canada, by the way.
And Canada, will receive this data sent down from the DSP satellite. Now, when they receive this data, of course, that is different than knowing what this data is.
Correct.
So they would want to know if something were, for example, a missile as opposed to a jet aircraft.
Correct.
Both objects give off heat. Am I correct?
Yes.
So they must have a way to make a determination that this is a jet, this is an airplane, this is a forest fire, and this is a rocket. This is an ICBM. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's correct.
Those are called Golden curves, after Dr. Golden, who was the one of the early pioneers in this field. Early on, Aerojet built, and we still do, by the way, build rockets. We build them up in Sacramento now. And Dr. Golden was charged with the task of determining how efficient the fuels were we were blending. One of the ways to do that is to measure the heat that the fuel develops while it's burning. And each fuel burns at a different temperature. I'm sure you're aware, if you hold a match or a flash bulb or a charcoal fire, those are all different temperatures. Well, they look different to IR sensors. And so Dr. Golden devised a set of time intensity profiles, and we call those golden curves. And each burning system, whether it's a fire or a rocket or a jet, no matter what it is, produces a time intensity profile. The computer matches those time intensity profiles against that data coming down from the data stream from the satellite.
So it must have an extensive database.
Oh, yes, definitely. And to determine what it is that we're looking at.
Okay. We are right now almost at 20 minutes after the hour. I hate to even do this. I hate to stop. We've got to stop and do a commercial break. And we already have some phone calls there. We want to take those phone calls. So if I can ask all you gentlemen to hold on for just a moment, and let's do this break. And when we come back, more of this fascinating subject. I find this aspect of UFO research, I think, is the most interesting for me personally. Okay, now, we're talking about serious stuff, right?
It was not anything from this earth that I'm quite sure of. Because I was being an intelligence officer, I was familiar with just about all materials used in aircraft and our air travel. This is nothing like that. It could not be. It could not have been.
And you know, we have a number of, that was of course now unfortunately deceased Jesse Marcel, Major Marcel, who was one of the first people out at the debris field in Roswell. And we have a number of quotes. I want to thank especially Paul Davids, who of course is the executive producer on the movie Roswell, for supplying those to us. So Paul, I know you're out there listening. We want to thank you very much. And during the course of the show, you're going to be hearing some more. Okay, let me check here. Golly, you don't know where you're at if you don't have a scorecard, and I've got to read mine. Let's take some phone calls. We've got Brian, who's joining us from Albuquerque, New Mexico, on satellite. And Brian, welcome to UFOs Tonight. What's on your mind?
Hello, Don and Dwight and everybody. We had quite a review today in the Albuquerque Journal about the movie, and different UFOologists, I guess, from around here. The reviews were kind of mixed about it.
Oh, we had a couple. We've read a couple of mixed ones, too. USA Today had one that was something less than positive. But then what the heck do they know about the subject?
The one I wanted to ask you three questions just about this so I could get the information.
Well, Brian, two questions are free, and the third question will cost you $5.
Okay, you got a deal.
Okay.
you know, I guess you probably know a guy named, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. It's P-F-L-O-C-K.
Flock. Yeah. Carl Flock.
Carl Flock.
Right. He thought the movie was very good. He said that he thought that it, his exact quote was, they took some crazy stuff floating around the fringes of the UFO, research, and they kind of hitched it to the Rod Roswell wagon, he says.
And then what?
He says they hitched it to the Roswell wagon.
Uh-huh.
He says that the movie, they maybe could have left some of those things out, and it would have been a little better. Basically, what he's saying.
So, what are you telling me? He didn't like it?
Well, no, he basically liked a lot of it. He said it wasn't a bad way to spend an hour and a half.
Oh,
but what he claims was.
Well, that was awfully generous of him, don't you think?
About the live alien and some of the things about the something about reading the mind, the one guy reading the mind and all this and that.
Well, let's not forget, now Carl's been a guest on this show. Now,
right.
Let's not forget that Carl, at one point in his checkered career, was an employee of the Central Intelligence Agency for 6 or 7 years, and then later...
Take his word for it.
Yeah. That's right. And later, he was an Assistant Secretary of Defense, so...
But one thing that kind of makes his story a little bit credible is he states in here that he believes that there were aliens found, and that it was an alien spacecraft, well, but it crashed there. He states that in here very plainly several times. He kind of thinks that some of these things went a little far in the movie.
Brian?
Right.
Motion pictures are, by definition, entertainment. And believe me, unless you see the word documentary, I mean, no one has ever sent their child to a movie and said, come back and tell me everything you saw, darling, because that's history. Mm-hmm. It is first entertainment. It really is. And if they can't do that to you, you will walk out. And there were some liberties taken. They took all of the stories. They tried to paint a picture that would encompass many, many aspects to this story. But and so anybody can sit down and say, well, not everything could possibly be true. And I think they would be right. But on whole, it tells the story in a serious vein. And it also points out the dilemma that people have who are following the subject. And that is the information that is disinformation and the information that is real. In other words, even in the telling, it wasn't clear as to whether or not that was an actual fact or not. in the movie, when they showed you the alien and reading the mind, you weren't sure whether that was the truth or whether that was a story. The movie delineates that very clearly.
You know, in many respects, it's like investigating a traffic accident, Dwight, when I was a uniformed policeman. You have, let's say, two cars that run into each other. You've got seven or eight witnesses on the street, and you get seven or eight or nine different stories of what actually happened.
Well,
human perception.
Rashomon. And Marcel, in this movie, and I don't want to give away what this movie is about, but he is plagued by the different stories. And they have gone to great pains to make sure that you hear four different people tell the same story four different ways. There is, so Mr. Flock, I don't think, was watching the film. I think he was thinking about the paper he wrote recently.
He also talks about that.
Yeah, he was thinking about that.
And he kind of drove away Area 51.
Yeah, he was probably watching the movie, and he probably had a little pen light there while he was looking at see how it followed down, and it was dark, and so he didn't really watch it too carefully, because this film protects itself. I think it was an excellent job by the producers, the directors, and the actors.
You know, you guys were talking, there's a couple of interesting things that I wanted to ask you about.
Well, okay, but we have some other phone calls, Brian. We're going to have to wrap this up quick, and we're almost at the half hour.
They just have an interview in here with Frank Joyce, and he's very compelling his arguments, what he says.
Yes.
And he just kind of makes a point about it, that someone had told him about it, and, you know, Braswell and everything. He talks in length about it, and also about how the FBI come back a few years later and told him not to talk about it anymore.
Right.
And also, Major Jesse Marcel, this is what I don't understand. You guys said that the government, how can the government keep a secret? It doesn't matter if people talk about it. Nobody will still believe it. 350-some people are witnesses to it.
Well,
this is the interesting thing. Then you've got a guy here from Sandia Labs. He says, Editor Ken Fraser of Sandia Labs News, all these witnesses and everything, and he trashes the movie as a you know, something else. You know, it's just terrible what he says, but I don't understand it. It wouldn't matter if 20 people came up to you and told you that were majors or generals, they seen it, nothing gets done about it. I don't understand it at all.
That is life, my friend. Exactly. Look, as much as I'd love to chat more about Roswell, we have got to move along. Plus, my two guests in here are going to be talking about a very, very fascinating aspect of the overall phenomena. Brian, I want to thank you for your call. Keep listening. Keep looking up.
Good night, Brian.
And it's 9:30. We've got to take that half-hour break. So when we come back, more of UFOs Tonight and the Deep Space Platform and UFOs.
And we...
And we are back. We are back. And we are talking tonight with my in-studio guest, Mr. Lee Graham and Mr. Ron Regier. And, of course, joining us once again is Mr. Dwight Schultz. Tonight's topic, other than, of course, the Roswell movie, the DSP Satellite Array. Now, this is something that has fascinated me for a long time. I never get tired talking about this. If unidentified flying objects are real. And let's differentiate between the idea that UFOs equate to alien spaceship. That is certainly one of the most workable, in my mind, hypothesis that UFOs may, in fact, be alien vehicles. We don't know that, and there's no way that we can at this point, sufficiently prove that this is the case. However, this is the speculation of many, many people for almost a half a century. If, in fact, they were alien craft or craft from somewhere other than planet Earth, right here, right now, today, then it would only seem logical that, in fact, they would be detected in outer space. Now, what we're talking about tonight is the DSP satellite. This is the satellite system that for over two decades has defended the United States in the sense that it has given us early warning of any suspected missile launches which would impact here in the United States. These satellites are up there at an orbit of 22,300 miles, continuously scanning all parts of the globe all the time. These are so sensitive that, Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, they can detect a garbage can fire. This is what I've been told.
I will not comment because we're not supposed to talk about how sensitive it is.
You can neither confirm nor deny.
That's correct.
Is that correct? Okay.
That is correct.
Well, let's just say that they're pretty good. They're
yes.
pretty good.
Darn good.
Okay, there you go. There you go. I understand that you can't talk about that. Let's take some more phone calls because we have some people here that are on. Oh, good. And Renee just told us that more coffee is brewing. Dwight, I think we're saved. Let's see. We've got Video Dave on line four. Video Dave, how's it going?
Oh, very good, very good. You know, one mistake that was made, Mr. Schultz talking about movies out there to entertain. I think one of the mistakes made was that Fire in the Sky should have had Dwight Schultz as a human-type E.T. that was aboard the craft.
Now, you know, I agree with you there.
You could have gotten up, Dwight, and you could have gone, Earthman, UFOs tonight, every Saturday, coming in the future. We will tell you the truth, Travis. We will tell you the truth.
Well, you know, Travis was on this show then, Dave.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Hey, I understand CRN is back on out your way.
What do we wanted to do? We wanted to welcome you back, covering the whole San Bernardino Valley, from Redlands to San Bernardino to Yucaipa to Forest Falls to Big Bear, all the way out to Indio and Palm Springs. Now, I know you can't cuss on radio, but what's wrong with these stupid beep-beep-beep people? They take you on, take you off, take you on, take you off, take you on, take you off.
What cable company are you with?
TCI Cable.
Well, they did the same thing with Century Cable. It was off. But
yeah, well, we had hundreds of people literally calling for months and months and months, and I told you it happened once before. But I know since my show is much more popular than yours, Don, you'll cut me off if I upstage you. So let me roll through this real, real fast here. First of all, I've gotten a lot of calls from...
You know what my father used to tell me, Dave?
What?
You know what my father used to tell me?
Tell me already.
He'd say, Don, he said, it's much, much better to keep your mouth shut and have people guess what a fool you are than to open it and confirm their suspicions.
That's real true. That's why I'm glad you stay quiet, Don. Anyway, Lee, Ron, Dwight, Renee, everybody, I hope you're having a great evening there. And the power of this satellite is very, very unique, Don, because a week ago or so you mentioned the Roswell Declaration.
Yes.
And I've gotten like 60 calls here trying to find out where to get it. So we do have it here at the UFO Clearinghouse.
Well, that's good news. I think that's potentially a very important document.
Well, if people want a copy of it, the postage is 54 cents to mail it back. You know,
okay.
It's about 6 pages, and if they want to... Do you have copies of it, Don?
Yes, I do.
Okay, or they can reach you at the office, either way.
Okay, Dave, we have got to roll along. My two guests in here, unfortunately, we haven't really gotten into this subject. I wanna cover this DSP thing in some depth, so I wanna thank you for your call.
Just two quick things. In the LA area to Monday on the Channel 4 News KNBC here in Los Angeles, a lot of people do enjoy these updates that I give out, Don. There'll be a special at 5 o'clock all week long on Area 51 and UFOs. Were you aware of that?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. And then, also, I had mentioned the Larry King special. I just briefly want to remind your listeners out there that on October 1st, nationwide, either on TBN...
I was just interviewed for that last week.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, I noticed that the television show Encounters has not been on for 2 weeks, but you were also interviewed for that. I understand you're going to be on in a couple weeks?
Yeah, they. As a matter of fact, one of their producers just called me up the other day, and... they were waiting to find out if they had been picked up as a weekly series, and I certainly hope they were. They are going to be running the rest of theirs like a series of specials, the last word I got. So the best thing to do is to just keep looking at the TV Guide, and as soon as
TV
we have...
TV Guide, though, they gave Roswell 2 stars. You think I'm going to read the TV Guide anymore?
Yeah, well, and of course, as we get information, we'll give it out. Okay, Dave, I want to thank you, and keep looking up. Gentlemen, we are, we were talking about the DSP. If UFOs... If we speculate that they may in fact be craft, manufactured craft, demonstrating a technology that would appear to be in many cases much more advanced than what we presently are aware of, It would make sense, would it not, that the DSP, in fact, might pick these things up in orbit?
Certainly.
I have no question about it. As a matter of fact, I was just looking here, thumbing through some papers during the commercial break. Soviet Military Review, published in June of 1989 by Alexander Kopitkin and Alexander Semyonov, said, speaking about this, this ballistic missile defense, and I'm quoting now, is designed to control outer space and destroy near-Earth air and space targets. Speaking of SDI, any system can be effective only if it is managed by super-quick computer system. So it's most important here to correctly identify targets. Corresponding computer cells must know what signal characteristics of the object it is tracking can make it a potential target. We believe the lack of information on the characteristics and influence of UFOs increase the threat of incorrect identification. Then mass transition of UFOs along trajectories close to those of combat missiles could be regarded by computers as part of an attack. So the Soviets, 5 years ago, were concerned about UFOs being confused with missiles. So you can bet your bottom dollar they got their Molniak spacecraft and tuned it to detect UFOs or to weed out UFOs so they could concentrate on real threats.
Well, you know, a newsman and broadcaster from 30-odd years ago, Frank Edwards, who, of course, is a very famous name in the early days of UFO research, wrote about an incident that happened in the very early 1960s, which, in fact, were confirmed by the Pentagon, and later they claimed that these radar returns were actually being bounced off the moon, which was ludicrous, but that the radar had picked up unidentified flying objects, which they identified incorrectly as a Soviet missile attack. Are you guys aware of that?
No, is that the one where he was pulled off the air when he started to announce it on television?
Well, no, they flushed several bomber groups until it was determined that these were not Soviet missiles.
What was the date?
This was like 1960, 1961.
Too early for us. That was too early for DSP.
Yeah, this was before the DSP. As a matter of fact, this would have been right after the Air Force originally were discussing, what was it, the Midas satellite system.
Yeah, that was a predecessor for us.
Right. Okay, I want to give out those numbers. Then we are going to... I've got seven people waving at me. Give out the numbers, Don. Give out the numbers. Do you think it might be that? I'm going to give out these numbers. Then we have some more phone calls to take, so stand by. And we are back. Let's see. I wanted to mention, too, you know, we're talking about space. We're talking about unidentified flying objects, travel between the stars. I got one of my big, really, interests in this back in the 60s when Gene Roddenberry came out with Star Trek. And, of course, Star Trek today has achieved a legendary status. Well, you know that right here on the Cable Radio Network on Friday evenings from 8 to 9, Joyce Mason has a program called Talk Trek. And Dwight, she's had many people from both the Next Generation as well as the original Trek. She's had people on from Deep Space Nine. And she's been trying to get you on for some time. She loved your Lieutenant Barkley character that was on The Next Generation.
Oh, no, that was another actor.
No, that was you.
No.
I recognize
you.
You've
got me confused. I'm right across from you, and you've got me confused.
No, yes. It was you. It was you. I recognize you.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, at any rate, Friday nights, you know, and you're going to get in trouble for lying.
I didn't lie.
Joyce Mason has a really, and I've been a guest on this program, it's been a lot of fun, Friday evenings from 8 to 9 p.m.
I have a question. Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Sure. This satellite, obviously I'm looking at a picture of it, ladies and gentlemen, as a civilian, not familiar with satellites, but this is, it's focused at the Earth.
Yes.
And it has star sensors, which are obviously
90-degree angle to the direction that it spins.
Now, is this, if there were an object unknown to us crossing the plane of the satellite,
yes,
could the star, in other words, would the star sensors pick it up, or could they pick something anomalous up, and then if it transferred underneath the satellite, in other words, would the satellite be able to track that?
The star sensors detect stars, so obviously if the object is glowing, it would be seen by the star sensor.
And if it were glowing, then it would be putting off some type of energy, it would seem.
That's correct. Yes.
And if it were to actually cross the plane of the satellite towards the Earth, you would then, of course, have the other sensors pick it up.
That's
so
correct.
You would be able, in time, to be able to say something moved
across the field of view of the star sensor into the field of view of the rest of the detector.
Now, through a kind of skewered way, Lee, you were able to prove beyond a doubt that the DSP, in fact, does see UFOs, weren't you?
Yes. This was kind of a weird, the way that this happened. The bulletin board, the Stafula, the one that was seen that was recorded by Stafula or that he published on the bulletin board, Ron picked that up and he took it to security. I went with him to security and we checked it out with security. Then I went to the FBI about it, and since security did not alert FBI about it, and FBI said it was security's call whether it was classified information or not, then, of course, I went to you, and you said that you had, from Stafula, the diagram which showed this thing.
This incident, in May of 84, yeah.
Then, from what's called the ITEDB, Individual Target Event Database, I found that that event was indeed recorded.
And that's what this paper is.
That's what you have. And you'll see that the star sensor, or the star, is in the field of view.
But I was actually referring to the Tehran, Iran, July 1976 incident.
That has to do with a different instrument that's aboard the DSP. There's another instrument called the Advanced Radek, which is built by the Sandia people. And they can detect nuclear explosions. They can also distinguish a nuclear explosion from a meteor. Way back in, I believe it was 72, was it? Or was it 76, Ron?
Yeah, what are we talking about? The Iranian UFO?
I believe it was 76.
Yeah, 76.
In which this Iranian UFO, they had chased with a...
Two F-4 Phantom
aircraft. And they locked onto it to fire an AIM-9. Now, an AIM-9 is an IR-guided missile.
Infrared missile.
It
locks onto the heat as opposed to radar.
Correct. Assuming that since they had locked onto it, then the DSP would have tracked this thing. So I made a request to the people at Sandia, and they came back and told me originally that, yes, they had this record. However, somehow it got lost. But they did supply me with proof that they did track meteors. Like I say, they acknowledged that they had tracked this. They had records of this, but they're...
Well, let me ask you a question. Just recently, Lee, there were some reports released about huge explosions in the outer atmosphere, almost of a nuclear magnitude.
It should be stated here that there are tapes that record what, as long as the DSP has been online, which is over 20 years now, they have these broadband tapes, and they record. And anything that the DSP detects is recorded, which I suggest to the audience out there, the way of proving that the UFO phenomena exists is simply write to your government, your congressman, make a Freedom of Information Act request for all of these tapes over the years of what the DSP has detected.
Ah, that would be interesting. The big question is, would they release it? Well, let's go to the phone lines. I've got, we've got our buddy Ralph from Escondido. Is this Ralph the Skeptic?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good evening, Ralph. How's it going?
Well, you know, I once worked on this satellite. By the way, it's called the Defense Support Program.
That is correct.
And I worked on...
Is it not in deep space, Ralph?
I believe it's up there. It's geosynchronous, or...
22,300 miles?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a deep space platform then.
Right.
Oh, okay.
I was wondering now, this event that they saw in May of 1984, what was the location and the speed, and did it maneuver, and it could have possibly been the shuttle or a hypersonic vehicle?
Go ahead.
Is this multiple choice?
Phil Klass said it was the SR-71.
Yeah, that could give off IR.
Well, yeah, but the problem is, Ralph, this thing came in from behind the satellite.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think the SR-71 could go up to 22,300 miles. Do you?
Where was it located?
It came from behind the satellite.
And did it fly across a landmass or an ocean?
Yes, called the Earth.
What was the speed of the vehicle?
Time, it varied.
It was a 9-minute long target.
By
the way, you worked on DSP?
I worked on the TT&C part of it, the S-band.
Uh-huh.
At TRW, you know they built the satellite.
Yeah, they built the bus.
I'm interested in the IR cameras that's used there. Are you familiar
They're
with
not
the new
cameras.
Are you familiar with the new Kodak platinum silicide instrument and also the new mercury cadmium telluride Rockwell camera? And do you use those materials at all?
We're familiar with both of them, and they haven't been used yet on DSP.
Uh-huh. So you've ruled out an SR-71 type vehicle, though.
I have. Maybe you still want to accept that. That's okay with me.
Well, it would depend on what kind of trajectory and what kind of...
Well, I don't think there's one yet that's gone up
22,300 miles. Is a long way up.
So it was tracked by the star trackers first, and then by the
infrared. The star sensor picked it up first, and then across the field of view of the infrared detectors.
Ralph, it could be an A9 variant.
Well, that sounds interesting. And you said what you think that the people should ask should make a Freedom of Information request and see if we can get the DSP recording.
That's correct.
That's interesting. Thanks a lot for the tip.
Okay, Ralph, I want to thank you for your call. And we are, let's see, I guess it's time. Is it time to take another? Yeah, I guess it is. Renee, if you would like to grace us once again with your lovely voice giving out those phone numbers.
Why, thank if you're troubled about something.
Decide where the crash was. And what I saw, I couldn't believe there was so much of it. It was scattered over such a vast area. So we proceeded to pick up as much of the debris as we could, loaded in a wagon. We filled that up. It took us a good part of the day to do that. Because it was such small fragments that we had to do a lot of picking. We found a piece of metal about a foot and a half to 2 feet wide and about 2 or 3 feet long. Felt like you had nothing in your hands. It wasn't any thicker than the foil out of a pack of cigarettes. But the thing about that got me is that you couldn't even bend it. You couldn't bend it. Even with a sledgehammer would buzz off it. So I knew that I had never seen anything like that before. And as of now, I don't know what it was.
Roswell, the movie, Be There. Okay, we're going to go to Grants Pass, Oregon. We've got Lee on there, and it's not the Lee that's in studio. Good evening, Lee.
Good evening, gentlemen.
And what is on your mind tonight?
Oh, a few things are on my mind tonight. For the, video something or other that called up on TCI?
Video Dave?
Video Dave,
okay.
Yes. TCI is very accommodating in Southern Oregon. They put CRN on the FM dial. And if you cannot get the local TCI office to do it, you can call them toll-free in Denver at 1-800-800-2824 and ask to talk to Barry Marshall or Sharon Wilson, their director of operations. And they will see to it that your local cable office does that.
Oh, that's good news, Lee. Thank you.
And getting back to a couple other points. The ceiling height on an SR-71 Blackbird is 93,000 feet, so it couldn't have been that.
Don't tell Phil Klass.
No.
Phil Klass thinks it might have been the Blackbird.
No. Anyway, when 1968, I grew up in the Bay Area, in Santa Rosa, as a matter of fact, and it was about 10:30 one night, and my brother came running into the house, jumping up and down, went outside. My mom came out, my sister came out. My dad had just gone to bed. He wouldn't get up. And most people, when they say that they've seen a UFO, they say lights. We saw an actual, I would say, cylinder-shaped with a glow, a metallic vehicle of some sort, but it did have a greenish glow to it. Within a matter of seconds, Hamilton Air Force Base, which was about 30 miles south, we heard this tremendous roar, and I think that they were F-4s coming up, approaching, and this thing was about probably maybe at that point it was slowly rising. It was up to maybe about 10, 12,000 feet at the time. And when these jets came in and approached, this thing went straight up, and those jets turned and went straight up, and we watched them to the point that they just about went out of sight. And at the same time, I had an uncle who worked at Ames Research Lab in Sunnyvale, and he gave me the right-hand hatch cover, Gemini 3. And he said, don't ever think there ain't nothing out there, because there sure as the hell is. And yes, I swore over the air. And another thing came to light when I was working for K101 in San Francisco. I worked there for a number of years. I met a person whose mom, well, his dad, was working for the U.S. Military Sealift Command, which they take, you know, various cargoes around, you know, around the sea, around the world, whatever. Very, could, you know, range from food to anything sophisticated.
Right, right.
And his brother, at the time, happened to be, and I saw the letters to prove it, in Roswell in 1947. He was a driver for a colonel at the time when all this happened.
Mm-hmm. Let's move it along, Lee, because we've got to pick up the pace.
He sent letters to them, and he mysteriously died in about 1979. And when he died, the military came to the house and collected all of the letters. They went through the house, and fortunately, she had made copies of all the letters, and those are the ones that I had read and copies. And as I was talking to the other person, to Dwight Schultz, I am mailing you an envelope, a letter with something in it, and I hope you pick it up late this week. I'll mail it Monday.
All right.
Why Dwight and not me?
He's got tears in his eyes.
He's prettier.
No, it's just something I want to ask you.
God, and I've got the kill button here, Lee.
Just something I want to ask you.
You know, I've got the kill button here.
Yeah. That's all right. But the number for TCI, like I said, is 1-800-800-2824. Barry Marshall or Sharon Wilson.
Okay.
Thank you, Lee.
Lee, I want to thank you for your call.
Thanks for sending the letter to me.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's
got to come to my office first. Ha ha ha.
I'll put confidential on it.
Well, he'll be sure to open that.
Okay, Lee. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
All right. All right. We're almost at the top of the hour. Lee, Ron, speaking of Roswell, and of course with the movie coming out tomorrow, this is something that that's going to be in a lot of people's minds. And the DSP, is there a correlation between those? Do you see a correlation between them?
Well, I think that it's obvious. If the Roswell crash is true, then we would know what the vehicles are. And then the DSP could be used to track these type of things. However, if
there is something on the DSP, is there not, that you suspected and Ron suspected may have been put there expressly for unidentified objects?
Well, I had a conversation with the former president of the company. A gentleman, can I name his name?
Sure.
Mr. R.G. Richards. And from a model that was sitting on his desk of the DSP satellite, he told me that there's these two things that stick out that track fast walkers. They're not on this picture. They're on another one.
Now, fast walkers is, of course, what we suspect may be the code word, or was the code word, for unidentified flying objects, or UFOs. Can you confirm that?
No, I will not identify what a fast walker is.
These so that, that's a right classified here. That's a classified term.
I will not comment.
Okay. The term is a code name for what is classified.
Very well. Well, gentlemen, we are at the top of the hour. We've got to stop now. Take time to take a break, do some more commercial stuff. When we come back, more of UFOs Tonight. My name is Don Ecker. This is UFOs Tonight on the Cable Radio Network, and in studio with me is Mr. Dwight Schultz, who, of course, is joining us once again. It's always a great pleasure, Dwight, to have you in here. We have Mr. Lee Graham, we have Mr. Ron Reguerre, and, of course, those other folks that make this program possible. Renee, who does such a fantastic job, and all our musical interludes are courtesy of Mr. Jeff Floro. Jeff, thanks a ton. And we will be back after these very important words.